Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we'll sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these artists. Conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today we're talking with Paul Germain. Welcome to Zero Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate it.
I know your voice is a little bit scratchy because you had an opening recently.
Yeah, I'm afraid I overdid it Friday night with all those boisterous art enthusiasts.
Really?
Trying to shout over all of those people at the reception kind of killed my voice, and then I topped it all off with a gallery talk Sunday. So this isn't really me. It's sort of when they disguise those voices.
This must be one of the reasons that they say that, painters paint. If they could talk about it, why would they paint it, right?
So. Well, it is generally kind of a solitary existence. So when you let us out of the cage, we kind of go crazy, and I think that's what I did Friday night.
How is that for you? I've talked about this with other artists, just that the whole thing about going in the studio, confronting a canvas, being alone. Is that scary for you? How is that for you?
Not at all. I know that every artist is different. Some need, for instance, to leave the house to be able to go to a studio like they're going to work, sort of like a 9-to-5. And I've never been able to do that, for one thing, even when I was freelancing as a graphic designer and an illustrator. I worked so many hours and such odd hours that I would never have seen my family if I wasn't working upstairs.
Right.
So I would go downstairs, have dinner, and maybe chat around and take a look at what the homework was like, and go back upstairs and sometimes pull a 24-hour night, the way commercial artists have to do sometimes.
Excuse me. So you've always worked from your home.
Almost always. I started life as an art director. We did mostly package design, so it was a very dry sort of thing for me. I very quickly had to find a creative outlet for that. And that started for the first year was like doing darkroom work, because that's what I learned to do as a as a commercial.
What does that mean, darkroom work?
Well, I was dabbling in photography.
Oh, okay.
But that was a good jumping off point for my earliest paintings. And a lot of Richmonders, if they're old enough, might remember that I did some photorealism, mostly with a surrealistic bent to it.
Right.
It was, I look back on it, it's rather naive, but it seems that it was very popular in the 70s and the 80s, part of the 80s. That was a nice way to introduce myself to the public. It was fun. I enjoyed tweaking people. It was sort of like fun to come up with the strangest kind of painting you could do, and then go out and show it and see what people's.
What kind of strange painting? What do you mean? Because you just said photorealism. I don't think of that usually as strange.
It was not technically like Magritte, René Magritte.
Right.
But a lot of those kind of optical tricks where you would take somebody's mind and just bend it a little bit, because you were using I was using photorealistic imagery that was more akin to, say, Salvador Dali.
Right, so sort of surrealism?
Yeah. But
I guess the one image that Magritte everybody thinks of is the guy with the apple in front of his face.
Well,
and
I didn't do that
bowler
sort
hat.
Of thing, but I would take photorealistic imagery that was highly technical in a way to paint, and make it so real, but then bend it a little bit so that there was a juxtaposition of imagery that just couldn't happen in real life. So people would be drawn in by the color and the realism, and then
why? Do you know why? I mean, you started out as a graphic artist, right?
Yes.
You said something interesting. You said that it was. I think you used the word boring.
It was never boring. It was dry.
Dry. What does that mean?
Well. You're a commercial artist, and even when I started freelancing and picking and choosing my own clients and doing some illustration too, you're always at the beck and call of the guy who's paying the bill, right?
So what was missing that made you want to move into painting?
I wanted to do what I wanted to do, right? And that's the way I've always been.
Really? Is that a real driving force?
Yeah. During Roy Proctor's interview for the newspaper, he asked me if I went to RPI. I said, Roy, I was way too hard-headed to go to school.
You know, really?
I couldn't wait to get out of school. Yeah. My grandfather had made his living as an artist his entire life.
And really? What kind of artist?
Through the Depression, which must have been very difficult.
What kind of art?
He did everything he had to do to raise a family on art.
So he was doing graphic art, he was doing signs,
He did everything. He did billboards, he did murals down in Florida during the land boom. He was an art director a number of times for various magazines, mostly in Florida.
Wow.
He during the war, during the Second World War, he actually worked for Lockheed in Atlanta doing technical manuals and stuff. He was kind of elderly at that point. I know he even took a whole year and went to Ohio to work for an industrialist who was building a house, and all he did was design fixtures and stuff.
Really? But he never had that same desire you have, apparently. He didn't have the luxury, you think?
He didn't have the luxury, exactly.
Really?
Yeah.
You think he had the desire?
But he was a very good artist.
Yeah.
Better than I will ever be.
And really?
My mother, prior to meeting my dad when he was in the Navy, this is, again, World War II.
Right
out of high school, my mother got a job with Fleischer Studio in Miami. When they moved from New York, there's a book out by Fleischer's son now. It's very good.
Really?
Very
What's good Fleischer about. Studio?
They made, the Fleischer brothers made like Popeye cartoons.
Really?
Betty Boop.
All right. So
by World War II.
So is that the kind of drawing she was doing?
She was in the special effects department, airbrushing. And by that point, they were doing feature length films.
So she was an artist also.
Like Gulliver's Travels and Mr. Bug Goes to Town and a lot of the Superman cartoons that were shorts and that sort of thing. So I grew up with all that stuff around. You know, we mistreated all these cells that were, you know, these cells.
Right. So you obviously have very, very well-developed drawing skills, right? I mean, you can draw.
Yeah.
But I
tell you what my mother gave me and my grandfather gave me was permission to be an artist.
What do you mean?
People of my age, growing up in the 50s and 60s, were raised by parents who were in the depression when they were young. And they know how hard it was not to have a job. So most of the kids I went to school with, this is Douglas Freeman High School, would never have gotten permission to be an artist.
You know,
they could be an artist if it was a hobby, but not a living.
Well, that's still true today, I think. Less so.
I think less it's so. Less so. It seems to me that kids have a little bit more latitude. It just may be my perception, and it certainly depends on the.
Well, didn't it ever scare you? Didn't you ever think, I've got to get a real job?
Tim, I tell my wife's students, she's an art teacher at Trinity Episcopal. Right. I tell my wife's students, I couldn't add and I couldn't spell. There just wasn't anything left. I knew I could be an artist because everybody else in my family was an artist.
Right.
And as it turned out, my sister's a graphic designer, has made her living as a freelancer her whole life. So it's just something that was possible for us, and I never thought it would be that big a deal.
Really? So there wasn't, I mean, like some people, it really is a huge decision. You know, most of us are raised, whether we realize it or not, to, you know, think that in this culture anyway, you know, making a living as an artist, well, first of all, is probably impossible. And secondly, that at best it's very risky. And you've been able to actually make a living pretty much as an artist.
Never tell anybody I haven't made compromises along the way.
Right.
But I think the important thing is not to make those compromises where it might compromise your integrity as an artist.
What do you
artist.
Mean? Tell me, talk about that.
Well, for instance, I've worked within and without the gallery system for as long as I've been making my life's work as a painter. and I've been doing it full time since the early 90s. When the gallery,
so you've been working full time as a painter since the early 90s.
That's correct.
Yeah. Right, so not graphic arts or any of that.
I had a clean break, and I can
really
tell you about that if you're interested.
But, yeah, no, that's interesting.
It was sort of like a 360 for me in my life.
Really?
At the time, but everything kind of fell together.
What happened?
I was very lucky.
I mean, how'd that come about?
Well, I raised three kids on the commercial art.
Right.
My wife, as I mentioned, is an art teacher, but she would work part-time. Mm-hmm. While our last kid, the daughter, right, was going through high school. When she left for college and all the kids were off and grown and that sort of thing, I was faced with having to make a transition in my commercial art career into computer graphics. So it was a very tough time for me. I went to seminars and meetings, trade meetings, everything, try to figure out what this stuff was about.
Because it was new and it was what was happening, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't so new. I mean, talking late 80s mainly, but
well,
I was able to do it up until then without having to, to learn this new tool. And that's all it is a tool. But I really loved the old tools. You know, I was an old schooler, and I liked the pencil, the pen.
Paper.
Paper, actual paper. we used knives, you know.
Uh-huh.
So it was a time that I had to make that decision. But I also found that
because you found that computer graphic art. What do you call it? Computer graphic art, I guess. Generating images through a computer, right?
Computer graphics. Yes.
I mean, that just wasn't doing it for you.
No, it was seemed very sterile to me. But,
yeah.
But you see, I had been wanting to break away from the whole business.
Right.
So it was a damn good excuse for me not to continue with that part of my life. And my wife made it possible. She went to work full time. It was offered to her and she took it. So the benefits were there. A steady income was there. My income even today is very spiky, as you might imagine.
Right.
Anybody who makes their own living can find that to be true. And she said, go for it.
And, right.
I mean, so I owe it all. I owe it all to her. Really. Uh-huh. I mean, it was. I decided at that point that what I had been doing the past 25 years, previous, really had become kind of stale for me. I guess you could say I'd said everything I wanted to say about it, because I kind of worked myself into a dead end. The last body of work that I was working on got involved in issues of life, death, and rebirth. It was a lot of a juxtaposition of human and animal imagery in the work. But quite frankly, I wasn't sure what I was trying to say.
Right.
And I completely baffled everybody else that tried to look at it. Right. I mean, it won lots of juried awards and juried exhibitions.
So it was technically astute, but you weren't there.
Looking back on it, I think it was kind of preachy.
Yeah.
I was trying to tell people what to think about what I was saying to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, no wonder, you know, that this is hard. And I had been quite interested, really, for 10 years prior to that. Whenever I would go to a museum, I'm pretty much self-educated, so I cherry-pick. You know, if I like an artist, I'll read everything about him. You know, I'll just completely devour everything I can read about that artist and his life, because I find artists' lives are as interesting as their work.
Yeah.
And I would go to museums and find my favorites and just try to study what they'd done. I found myself more drawn to the minimalist painters of the 60s and 70s than I was to anybody else. And you name it, the household names like Mark Rothko, I think everybody would recognize. But I was more.
That's even, interesting. When I saw your work the other night, I thought about Rothko.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I did an homage, a whole series that were homages to Rothko.
It just, I mean, not all the pieces.
Kind of fun, but just takeoffs on his work.
Especially that one we pointed to, the older one.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
That was actually an homage to, it was a series of homages to Kazimir Malevich, another favorite of mine.
Right.
It broke me from dealing with a rectangle to the square, which he was known for. But
only an artist could say that.
Yeah.
Going from the rectangle to the square. Someone listening who doesn't know anything about artists, like, why would you want to go from the rectangle to the square? What does that even mean?
There is a huge difference. I mean, you know, you think about it, the square is equal on all four sides. It's a whole different dynamic than a rectangle or any other shape. So, but anyway, I liked Agnes Martin, who dealt with a grid. I mean, she's still alive. These are almost all large-scale pieces, but Ed Reinhardt, whose work it infuriates people because they think it's all black. You know, it's just a flat, black, large canvas.
What do you like about it?
Well, it's very prayer-like. If you stand front of it, you start to realize there's a cruciform figure in there of usually nine blacks that are slightly different value black.
Right, right.
You know, it's like a little hidden treasure in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you have to stop long enough and create a little dialogue with the work before you're even aware of it. And I find that was true with the minimalist composers that I was listening to in
Philip Glass
in the studio. Philip Glass mostly.
Yeah.
But others, Steve Reich and John Cage, who wasn't really a minimalist, but these are even Arvo Pärt.
Does it still? I mean, is it still a strong influence on your work?
I think so. You know, influence is a loaded word.
Right.
I mean, if I tell people that, sometimes they would go to the work and try to stare at it and see if they see this influence. But, you know, it's just what I'm interested in.
Uh-huh.
And that's got to have an influence in abstract work because it's all about the interior space, not the exterior.
What does that mean?
Well, I bump into a lot of people that are a little bit intimidated by abstract work.
I mean, you know, I was going to call this show, well, I could have done that.
Yeah, you're right. You know? I've heard that before.
Those people walk in and look at stuff, you know, like, well, I could have done that.
Yeah.
The great comeback to that is, really? Well, you didn't.
Yeah, I tell people, you know, doing it's easy, try sell it. That's the hard part.
Right.
No, I think, you know, people want to know, you know, but they make fun of it sometimes just out of fear. But it's strictly, it's so simple, it's almost too obvious. And, you know, it's just about abstract, the difference between abstract work and
What do you see the difference as?
One is about the exterior world.
And
one is all about the interior.
Interior world,
you know,
okay.
And I don't think people have to know any more. You know, sometimes you see light bulbs go off.
Right.
You know. And so it's not so intimidating anymore, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's about the interior world, then it can be about your interior world.
And your emotional world.
So you can bring your experiences to the
Do you work from emotion? Do you work from intellect? Do you work from
I think of it as
intuitive?
Intellect. But
you do. I mean, do you start with an idea? Do you?
Well, I have little lubricating things that make the work move along.
Really? Like what? Give me an example.
And those ideas sometimes will happen as an epiphany, but most generally I work in series so that I'll have a jumping off point to the next painting. So every time I finish a painting in one series, I will say to myself, you know, I may have done 200 of these, but I've got more to say about this.
Really?
And so I'll try another one. And, you know, I'll change the palette. I'll move elements around.
Uh-huh.
I'll change the scale or the format.
Are you using the same imagery?
It'll have the same general elements in it.
Right.
You know, so each one will have some relationship to the next. And I've got at any given, you know, some of these.
So there is either an evolution or devolution or something going on there.
Well, yeah. Sometimes I can't say it's that everyone is an improvement on another.
Right.
But I am always exploring in that sense.
That's interesting. There you go. That's another word that I hear a lot of people use. Uh-huh. What are you exploring?
Well, as I said, I'm exploring within that series of work. But I've got other series that I'm drawing.
But you're exploring for time. You, exploration means exploring color, exploring surface, exploring what do you?
All of those things.
All those things.
Yeah. I strive for this, kind of getting back to this optical illusion thing that Magritte was famous for. Uh-huh. I strive for this idea of coming up with this magical third dimension in a two-dimensional piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
without perspective, without using the
that's
obvious
perspective.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
Yeah, my mentor told me that, look, Paul.
So you're talking about, like, one of your works I saw, are you striving to have sort of that shape, let's say it's a square shape, sort of a Rothko-esque kind of shapes on a solid background. Are you striving for that to be almost floating in that space?
Floating or superimposed,
yeah.
It doesn't matter. As long as people see some depth to it just adds interest to the work.
Uh-huh.
Usually it's color. Color has, it's pretty easy to make those push-pull kind of things happen with color.
Right.
If you put two opposite colors, if you superimpose them, they start to
vibrate.
Well, color
looks is pretty important to you, obviously. I mean, it's a big part of your paintings.
I had to force myself, though.
Did you?
Because I was afraid of color in my early life.
What does that mean, you're afraid of color?
I end up just doing black and white the rest of my life.
Yeah, what do you mean, afraid of color? Just because it's so complex?
It's scary. Yeah.
Why is it scary?
Well, it is, to me, a great deal more complex than monochromatic work.
Right.
My earliest abstract work was largely monochromatic.
Hmm.
They were very minimal, and much so than they are now.
Okay.
But I told Roy Proctor I kind of missed the figure after a while, and these elements, these geometric elements, started to enter into the work, and in a way that was like figures.
People
inhabiting the work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Plus, you can allude to things like horizon lines and stuff. And, that kind of give it a sense of landscape. But
well, let's talk
really
about your, because our time is whizzing by. Let's talk about your show. Where is your most recent show?
It's a new gallery on Main Street, the Red Door Gallery. And
okay.
It's just east of Lombardi.
Lombardi, okay, on
and
Main.
It's an exciting district.
Right by Artworks. Artemis.
Artemis. And it's real near Main Art.
Main Art, that's what I'm trying to say.
The Reynolds Gallery is down there. And
right.
There's the Rents Gallery, the Page Bond.
Yeah.
There'll be a new gallery opening right
But you're at the Red Door.
It's a very nice place.
And how long is the show going to be there?
It opened April 13th. I was tempting fate. It was a Friday.
Right.
And it runs through May 20.
Great.
I've got a long time to try to, make my mark here. It's the first solo show I've had in Richmond in over a decade, so it's kind of exciting.
And you gave a talk, a gallery talk. Tell me, you said you did it sort of off the cuff because you're more comfortable doing it that way and felt as though it'd be more interesting. What would you say about your work? What did you say that?
I kind of gauge what the audience might want. If it's largely an audience of artists, they are usually interested in the mechanical aspects of the work. And my work's sort of different. I mean, it's constructed sort of differently than most is, because it's a very heavyweight, is a panel made.
Oh, really?
A very heavyweight handmade paper. And it's
handmade paper?
Yes.
You make the paper?
No, I don't.
Oh, but you get handmade paper.
Each piece is made by hand. I actually use a very heavyweight, rough textured Arches watercolor paper made in France.
Oh, okay.
But it's very heavy.
Why that? That's a funny surface to work on.
I love it.
Really?
I was using it.
What are you painting? Are you painting in acrylics?
No, I paint it in oil.
Really?
But I treat the paper on both sides with two coats of acrylic gesso, which helps stabilize the paper, but it also isolates the oil paint from the paper, so it remains archival.
Right.
I mount it permanently to board, and that board is mounted with glue and screws to a wooden strainer, a wooden framework behind it.
So what do you like about the paper so much?
In relief from the wall without formal framing.
Right.
And that gives it sort of a three-dimensional kind of.
So the actual framing is part of the piece. I mean, it's not just not framing. I'm sorry. The actual structure, the building of the piece, is part of the piece.
Yes.
Interesting.
It retains a lot of the characteristics of paper, like the deckle edge. I just reinforce it so that it's not fragile.
I mean, I know this is going to sound strange, but I don't think I've ever seen anybody light up the way you just lit up when you were talking about that paper. There's something really, really there for you.
Being a self-taught artist has given me one thing and one thing only, and that's, I think, the ability to think out of the box.
Right.
There was nobody standing over my shoulder saying,
you can't do that.
you're not supposed to put paper without glazing, without a, protective glass, You can't do that. Nobody does that. So it's fun to be able to, do that sort of thing. I'm not very innovative, really, in my life. I've kind of stayed and...
This is sort of cuts against the grain of the worn out, art thing, but of the wild, crazy artists. But you did say that you never really, you're hard-headed. You never could really be told what to do or how to do it. So
if somebody had told
some
me
of that independence
that,
there,
I would have gone ahead and done it anyway, I guess.
Right.
So anyway, it is what it is. But I've been doing it for 15 years now and have...
And make a living from it.
I've got 1,000.
Wow.
Well, actually, by my count, probably closer to 1,400 pieces of work out there.
Really?
I hope everyone's being enjoyed, but I don't know.
It's kind of a nice feeling.
It's largely in the Midwest. I found my best market to be Chicago, St. Louis, Kansas City. I think people are bored to death in the Midwest. It's not a lot to do. They're stuck indoors a lot.
They need something interesting to look at.
A little bit of it in New England and Miami, some in Atlanta.
Well, listen, you're not going to believe this, but we're just about out of time.
Okay.
I know. We're almost
just getting
going here. How about website? Do you have one?
I do.
What's your name?
It's www.germainart.net, and my name is spelled without a final E. It's G-E-R-M-A-I-N.
Okay.
art.net.
And so www.germainart.net.
And anybody that wants to see the whole show at the Red Door Gallery can see it online also.
Okay.
It's on their website, and that's Red Door Gallery VA, as in Virginia, .com. And they've got nearly the whole show up, plus some pieces that are in the upstairs space.
Well, I feel like we just scratched the surface here.
I'll have to have another show.
That would be great. That would be great.
Yeah, this one looks like it's going to be a worthwhile endeavor.
Well, thank you. And, thank you folks for tuning in to Zero Hour. I hope you've enjoyed our lunch together. We look forward to seeing you on the radio next Friday at 12:30. And this is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us.